Thank you for listening to the Following Films podcast. Today I'm joined by producer Michael Mendelson. Michael is the CEO of Patriot Pictures, an organization that packages film production, financing, and distribution elements. Recent releases have been The Gringo Who Stole Christmas, God is a Bullet, and Blackout. But he's also worked on films like What Women Want, Quentin Tarantino's Reservoir Dogs, as well as Romeo and Juliet, and so many more. I had a great time chatting with Michael, and this is legitimately one of the best conversations I've had in quite some time. Just a little note here, we kind of started talking right away before we did formal introductions, and I was on with the publicist, and we were talking about Nicolas Cage, and there's this story he's telling about someone who approached him who was a big fan while they were at dinner. And I thought it was important to leave this one in, or I thought it was just a really fun anecdote. I wanted to include it in the beginning. But when he's referring to the Nick in the beginning of it, that is Nicolas Cage that he's talking about. And this is a great little story. Had a great time chatting with Michael, and yeah, hope you enjoy the show.
But you know, I was in Atlanta shooting Vengeance, A Love Story with Nick. And we're at the restaurant, an Italian restaurant, and the manager comes over and he's like, can I talk to you? Yeah. There's a guy camped outside, and he has a portrait of Nick on his cab. And, okay, what can I do for him? Well, he would really like to have Nick's signature on it so he can rush to the tattoo parlor and have the signature tattooed on his cab. I said, well, why don't I just, let's not ask Nick yet. Let me go see the quality of the portrait on his cap before I ask him. And so I excuse myself. I go outside to see the guy. Who knows if he's a serial killer or not? And he has a great portrait of Nick tattooed this big on his calf. I said, man, you are committed. So we're wrapping up dinner. I said, hey, Nick, you know, manager came over to me and this guy, who I must say is really committed, wants you to sign his tattoo so he can run off and get it inked. He says, well, let's look at the cab and I'll see.
He had the same reaction you did.
Yeah. And so we go and look at the cab and he's like, well, that's pretty good. He said, and he signs it and we leave, you know. And the guy literally speeds off to the tattoo parlor before it closes.
Just out of curiosity, what era Nick Cage are we talking about? Is this Wild at Heart, Rattlesnake Jacket, or what?
No, this, the tattoo? You know, that is a very good question. That's a very good question. It kind of looked like a photo from Family Man.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to bow out of this conversation, let you guys talk. So I guess this is the best way to start it. Michael, this is Christopher. Christopher, this is Michael. I'm going to let you guys chat and you can go wherever you want. And I'm actually going to take myself off screen too. But sounds you're good. Just using audio on this or using video also?
Just use the audio. Perfect. So
we'll chat afterwards also, Chris.
That sounds good. Hey, Michael, it's really nice to meet you today. Thank you so much for taking time.
Too. And you too. You're a real good journalist. And it's nice to speak to people like that.
I appreciate that. Thank you. It's just, I have the freedom of speaking to people whose work I'm interested in. So it makes what I do very easy when I can just talk to people who I like their work. And you're one of those guys that, you know, looking
I like over... your t-shirt's cool.
Thank you. Yeah. Are you a fan of the Smiths?
Yeah. Particularly that kind of artwork too.
Okay. Yeah, it's kind
Do
of a
you
little
play guitar?
not I screw around on it. I can do some barred chords, some open chords, but if you need a rhythm guitarist, I could you could do worse than me, but I'm not a lead guitarist by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah. Well, there's only a few real good ones anyway, right?
It's very true, very true. How about yourself? Do you play?
I have a lot of guitars, but I play tenor sax is what I play.
Oh,
I've been
nice.
playing since I was 12. And before that, I played viola. So I played viola for 13 years and saxophone from 12 on. And so, that's my thing.
Do you still play?
Yeah, I do. I just bought a new one that's being reconditioned right now. There's a guy down the street called Manny's Horn Shop.
Nice. And so are you a jazz guy or
I'm a jazz guy, but I have been stuck playing in my kids' schools when they were of that age.
That makes sense.
And then the hot shot who was running the band, some father would say, "You're not looking at the music." And I said, "Well, you're not playing in the key of the music, so why should I look at it? I'm going based on
You're following.
you took it up a fifth and then you made it sharp instead of flat. So I there's nothing to read. I got to do it by ear."
Is your ear that good? You're able to pick that up
It's
and play
pretty
it?
good. It's pretty
That's.
good. My last name is Mendelssohn, and we are related to the Bartholomew Felix Mendelssohn. And my son also plays saxophone and ukulele. And so, yeah, it's just, there's something about musicians and people that like music that I find them to be higher quality people than the regular fare. I don't know why it's a need to be organic in a certain way.
I have a difficult time connecting with or understanding people that don't have a deep love for music or art in general. If you're not into music per se, but you love film or you love, reading or some sort of art form, sculpture, painting, whatever it is, if you have some love in your life that's outside of yourself, some passion for creativity, then I feel like we're of the same tribe. If you're not that, it's tough for me to get my head around those folks.
Right, and that's the world we kind of traverse because some of the people where we finance movies, they're not, they could care less about the art. They're
Sure.
like, how do I get my money back? What are you going to pay me? But then you're talking to the director, like a Cassavetes, or we're just going to start an Elizabeth Banks movie in a couple weeks. And so, I mean, they're all about the art. The director's a sculptress, So you're literally translating languages between the business people and the creative artistic people.
So then, is that your role at, when you're a financier, when you're a producer? Are you just trying to make sure that the artist has the ability to make the art that they want? Is that kind of how you see that?
Essentially,
Okay.
the art that they want is sometimes not commercial, so I
Sure.
may modify it. Like in True Romance, for instance, the original Quentin Tarantino script, everybody dies. It kill everybody. And so, with a director that we got, Tony Scott, rest in peace.
Yeah.
A great guy, talented man. It's like, well, this isn't quite commercial. It's True Romance and everybody dies. How does that match? But then we had some modification to the ending. So Alabama lives, Christian Slater's character lives, the little kid lives, but Christian Slater loses an eye. So that was
Yeah.
our nod to the original script.
Now, was that original screenplay non-linear? because Quentin's first couple scripts, they, you know, you think of something like Pulp Fiction, it ends on what is essentially a happy note because you see the two leads walking off, even though, you know, he dies. John Travolta's character dies in the film, but you don't end with that, so it feels different. Did True Romance end in a similar way where Clarence has a happy ending, but we know that it's leading?
It does from the standpoint that when you see James Gandolfini killing, trying to kill Alabama, I mean, it's a very violent scene. It was the most MPAA criticized scene in the movie, and not for what you would think. For example, Gandolfini is beating Patricia Arquette's character to a pulp, to a pulp. He hits her with the top of the toilet bowl thing. He throws her through a glass window in the shower. He punches her in the face. He does everything. Ratings did not have a problem with it. Then she stabs him in the foot with a
The corkscrew.
corkscrew
Yeah.
and then gets the jump on the shotgun, flips it around, pumps two, three shots into him. Ratings doesn't have a problem with that. Then she holds it up, shotgun, and goes, ah! Hold on. What is that? What do you mean, what is that? This woman just survived this whole beating and was able to come out ahead, and so she's letting out her rage.
Yeah.
Nope, that's not allowed. That's not allowed. What do you mean that's not allowed? So for US, we had to cut the rage part. It only showed in the foreign version of the movie.
So I know I've seen this. So when I'm watching the director's cut or extended version of it, that's the difference that I'm seeing.
That's one of them, yeah.
Wow. It's. That makes literally no sense.
Thank you. Thank you. We spent nights trying to cut around it, and finally they just said, if you want the R, gotta cut it.
Because you have to eliminate the moment where she overcomes, and I never take that scene as pleasure. That is that just literally her
They don't
yelling.
want what they didn't want at the time. Women's rage. I don't know what that's early 90s. Yeah.
It's a different time, that's for sure.
Everything's a different time. I don't even know. You can't even say, wow, that's a beautiful dress you're wearing. You know, you could be put away, you know, terrible things now.
Could you talk? You mentioned Cassavetes, and God is a Bullet is, to me, I think, an incredibly underrated film from the last couple of years here. I thought that Ethan did some of his best work of his career in that film. I think you just have a really remarkable piece. It's something that absolutely
Ethan is very intelligent, by the
he
way.
oh
I love
I've interviewed
talking
him.
to
Great
Ethan.
guy. Yeah,
He's
great
a
guy.
great guy. And, you know, when you see his character and then you talk to him in real life, he's a brilliant young
Yeah.
man.
Yeah, wildly very thoughtful, introspective, kind person. And then it takes somebody like that to play a character that is that dark in it and to actually be able to inject some humanity into that person, because that is probably the darkest I've ever seen him go, is that film. And that includes
All
American History X. I think that this is a darker role.
those guys, Carl Guzman,
Yeah.
all those guys got dark.
Yeah,
But
there's a
that's
lot.
how it was in real life. It's based on a true story.
Yeah.
That's the other thing people don't understand. The book written by Boston Duran, which was a best-selling book, was read by Cassavetes in a college book club. And he decided back then he wanted to make the movie. Then 15 years later, he writes the script. And then 15 years later, he brings it to me And I said, what do you want to make, Nick? And he said, I want to make this. I said, it's kind of dark, isn't it? It's like, yes, it is. Yes, it is. But it's a true story. We only, our darkness was one tenth of what the real story was. One tenth.
Oh. I'm not sure that would have been watchable if it would have been.
Wouldn't have been. And a lot of people said this one was a bit difficult to watch too. But how do you do a true story without giving it a taste of a true story? You know?
Right.
Anyway, it's one of Nick's favorite movies. I just spoke to him. I told him that we were speaking, and I asked him, would he mind if you called him and he spoke a little bit from his perspective for a quote for you for that movie.
Oh.
And he said he'd be happy to.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, I would love to chat with him.
If you
that.
Would like, you know.
I would love to. Yes,
not that I'm chopped liver, but I'm not Nick Cassavetes. So,
well,
you know,
they're different things, and that's not what this is about to me. It's not chasing that element. It's really just looking at people whose work I'm interested in. And yeah, you're somebody who's had just this really incredible career where you've been involved. I look through it, and it's some of my favorite films, and it's consistent that you are always doing. You know, it's one of those things that just considering the volume of films that you've been involved in and productions you've been involved in, to see how many of these are actually really high quality films, it's really impressive. So how,
well, it's
how,
teamwork. It's teamwork.
Yeah.
And I'm fortunate because a lot of them have been turned down by the studios.
What's one that you would say, are there any out of your films that stand out as one that was turned down by a studio that you felt like, oh, this is just an obvious one. How do they not see it?
Well, I mean, God is a Bullet was turned down by everyone.
Sure.
And then we released it on 400 screens.
Yeah.
And Lord of War was turned down by everyone. And it's a kind of based on a true story. Victor Bout, who was a Russian arms dealer who we just traded for the, you know, basketball playing woman that,
yeah,
was
that had a pretty big, real big release though, didn't it? Lord of War, that was
it was released,
you were
by
over
Lions.
1,000 screens, right?
Oh yeah,
okay,
yeah. It was only out for 2 weeks, did 25 million in 2 weeks, you know, but it did 5 million DVDs, which when at the time is a sign that it could have done more if they kept it in the theaters. You know?
It's crazy that time is in the rearview mirror now when you think of that, because if you had any film that was doing $25 million, they would keep that rolling. They would extend, and keep that going at this point. And now the ancillary market with DVDs was so strong at that time that, yeah, you could move that many units in films that, you know, you end up two copies in every Blockbuster in the country, and you could make a profit on a well-budgeted film.
Well, I mean, even God is a Bullet, we released it between like Indiana Jones 6 and Mission Impossible 7.
That sounds right. Don't quote me, but that sounds
the
right.
Theaters are like, been nice knowing you, but we're releasing Mission Impossible now on 17 screens in the multiplex.
Yeah, that's how that goes. And those of us that are looking for the adult-minded fare that are still enjoy the theatrical experience, we have to search for it a little bit harder than we used to. But could you talk also, just in thinking of those types of films, something like Prisoners of the Ghostland? I just watched that the other night again in preparation for this, because, man, that is such a you rarely see a film like that that has that much style and ambition. And it's just every frame is just dripping with style. It's such a cool, well-constructed movie. And I just had so much fun with that thing.
It was fun to make, although, you know, we originally the director wanted to shoot it in New Mexico.
Interesting.
He's a Japanese director who doesn't speak English.
Okay.
So And then he had a heart attack, and then he was having a kid, and his doctor said he can't travel. So I spoke to Nick, and I said, Nick Cage, and I said, I don't think this guy should make this in New Mexico. I think he should make it in Japan. Are you okay going to Japan? And he's like, yeah, I would love to. Okay. So I call the guy, and I'm like, listen, good news, you're not leaving home. You're going to shoot it in Japan. Bad news is we got to go out there. And the last movie I had made in Japan was a movie called Dreams by Kurosawa.
Wait, wait, wait. You were involved in Dreams? I completely missed that.
I financed Dreams, yeah.
Dear God, that the imagery in that film is some of the most, and that's the reason I'm doing this today, is that movie that I used to go to the rep house in my neighborhood, and when Night of the Living Dead was there, Dreams was playing at the same time. And so in my mind, I always associate art house and like kind of grindhouse stuff together. And that was my introduction to Kurosawa, was Dreams. And my God, that's such an incredible, haunting, beautiful film. So yeah, wow. Well, sorry to I missed that in my research.
And so the Patriot team, which is Natalie Perota and Caitlin and Gabrielle, so our team went out there to Japan, and
Yeah.
you fly for a day, then you take a bus to the train station, and then you have to take a 2-hour high speed train out to the location in the middle of Japan, which is the site of like a abandoned nuclear reactor power station.
Yeah.
I think we were all glowing after that movie. And
Not because you were happy.
not from the reviews, no. And so we get there and we get to the lobby, and the director meets me there. And with 25 of the crew, and he says, I just want you to know, I quit. And Nick's already there. I quit. I said, it's been a long day. You mind if I go upstairs, take a shower, and I'll meet you downstairs, and I'll hear why you all are quitting. I don't know how you can quit, by the way, because we haven't started yet, but
Yeah.
I'm happy to discuss it with you. And he proceeds to tell me that the budget he agreed to make it for, now he wants 2.5 million more than what he agreed to make it for. And anyway, so the next day we have like a round circle AA type of meeting, and we go around the room to figure out what everybody's gripe is, because there's literally 25 gripes. And we're taking notes. And anyway, it turns out that all the money I've been sending hasn't been going to the guys.
Oh.
And so we have to change that process a bit. But the movie was fantastic. It eventually ended up in Sundance. We had gotten the writer to do a cut of it because the director had a very Japanese version, and that was the cut that ends up with the director's approval at Sundance. But I thought Nick was great, and that's a great thing about Nick Cage. He's willing to take chances with things that a lot of actors always want to play it safe or
Yeah.
play to their strength or their audience. And he's always recreating his audience just based on the quality and the amazing performances that he delivers,
Oh, I mean, just look at the last couple of years and the work he's, I mean, it's been this way the whole time, but you could take any 5-year period of his career and you'll see a Mandy. in there somewhere. You'll see a pig in there somewhere. You'll see a ghost land in there somewhere. And it's just, he does all these different things. And he, I think people often shortchange his performances by how nuanced and varied they are, because he can go very small and internal and go as big as anybody else and go as broad as anybody else. And his ability to vacillate between those two extremes is unlike anybody else, I think.
His versatility is amazing. The first movie I financed with him was called Red Rock West.
Love that one. Filmed right up the street from me here. Yeah.
And then, where are you, by the way?
I'm in Marana, Arizona. So.
Is it getting hot yet or no?
Not yet. It's beautiful now. It's perfect right now. So I mean, talk to me in a month and it'll be a different story, but we're still good right now.
I like your misters. Those misters are handy.
They're great. For sure. When it's dry, you just throw a little bit of water and you're good. So
I did shoot a movie in Apache Junction, Arizona in the summertime.
Oh, why would you do that?
I don't know why.
That is a rough spot.
I mean, as we're driving in, we see all the scorpions and snakes and lizards leaving town. It's so hot. I'm like, why are they all leaving town?
What'd you shoot out in Apache Junction?
It was some crazy Apache Junction, Arizona. There's some mystical mountains there. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people were murdered in these mountains. And so I think the director wanted to pick up on that energy. But it was so hot. You literally thought you were moving, but you weren't. You were just imagining that you were moving.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it, I mean, depending on where you're shooting in Apache Junction, there's not a lot of relief from that sun. So there's not a lot of trees or anything that you can get on.
Brutal.
There. It's brutal. Rough terrain.
Yeah.
People don't belong there, in my estimation. So.
And, you know, whatever you do, they don't realize between the altitude and the heat, whatever you take on the weekends, the crew magnifies 10 times. So some people found out the hard way.
So how did you get your playing alto sax, playing viola? How do you end up getting into financing films? How do you take that transition? Because it's, I understand a lot of areas of how people get into filmmaking, but the production side of things, you know, I'm somebody who, I have a small business that I run, but I don't think that I could run a film, because that is like it's this very short-lived micro time period of this very complicated business structure. It's unlike really a lot of other things.
Well, if you don't mind me, I'll tell you a high school story and then you'll
understand. I'd love that. Yeah.
So my saxophone teacher's name was Dr. Elwood Carl. He was a Juilliard professor.
Okay.
6'4". So it was time to apply to college, and he was saying he wants to put me up for Juilliard. And he says, and I'd like to talk to your dad about it. And I said, I don't think you want to talk to my dad about this. You know, my dad is a concentration camp survivor and a cabinet carpenter. And he says, no, can you invite your dad in? I'd like to talk to him. And he's like, no. I'm sorry, Dr. Carl, that wouldn't be a good idea. No, I insist. Okay, so I bring my dad in, and the professor goes, you know, I want to put you up for your son up for the school Juilliard. And my dad says, what is Juilliard? And he says, well, it's a school, a music art school, very prestigious in New York. And why would he go there? He says, well, he could become a professional saxophone player because he's a talented young man. And he says, oh, a professional musician. I see. Well, nice to meet you, he says. Michael, let's go. And we walk out. And he says, that was a very nice man, he says. And I must let you know that was your last lesson. No starving musicians. No starving musicians in the family.
Very nice.
I end up getting into the University of Pennsylvania. I end up going to the Wharton School there.
Oh, wow.
Where I meet a lot of, super smart people. And in fact, met my current financial partner, Mark Rowan, who is the CEO and co-founder of Apollo Capital Group. Very huge private equity, Wall Street type of guy. I love this guy. And anyway, I ended up going to Union Bank and then going to BNP Paribas. And that's how it started, where I had tried, I worked in the mailroom of William Morris.
Okay.
And I lived in New York with a guy named Ari Emanuel, became the head of William Morris Endeavor.
Yeah.
Just took the company public. And then I moved to LA, and then he came out to LA and slept on my couch for 7 months. And I love the guy. Anyway, it was the original entourage back in the day with Peter Berg, Steve Brill, Eric Heffron. These were the guys that we ran with, and Ari. And so anyway, so I ended up in the grown-up job of financing the construction of movies.
Okay.
Similar to how you construct a building, you have similar vendors, you have electrical, you have painting, you have construction, you have, you don't have plumbing, but you have transportation, and you have all the unions and stuff. So very similar, and we adopted a lot of our methods from real estate construction lending, and I applied it to production. And so that started a way of financing movies, where up to that point, they only financed pre-sales, which is like you get a movie, you sell it to Warner, they buy it for $10 million. You deduct the interest, you give them 9 and that. Well, sometimes you don't have a U.S. deal, you have foreign contracts.
Yep.
So then you have to discount those foreign contracts and you might have a gap. So the gap is against unsold territories. So typically at the time, banks would give you 0 if it was unsold. And so we started handicapping the unsold and saying, well, it's not 0.
Yeah.
They say it's worth 4 million. I don't know if it's worth 4, but it's probably worth 2. So let's give them the 2. And so that allowed movies that would never get made because there wasn't enough money to just get enough to get the picture financed, between what was sold and the gap.
Sure.
And so that's how we became a leader in the independent film world, is by not valuing unsold of the movie for 0, but giving it some like handicap based on the genre, the star, the track record of the foreign sales company. Mm-hmm. What other sales were there? Did that indicate market acceptance or not? Things like that. And so we ended up with all kinds of movies, Reservoir Dog, Pulp Fiction, Robin Hood, Men in Tights with Mel Brooks, Hurricane with Denzel Washington, Sleepy Hollow, La Femme Nikita, the French Nikita version, Johnny Mnemonic, which was a Keanu movie.
Oh, yeah, I remember. Then William Gibson novel, yeah.
Exactly. Henry V.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I remember that.
which, by the way, when we were selling Henry V, we had Japanese buyers come in and they were asking me, how did 1 through 4 do? Well, I recommend you read Shakespeare, but what can I say? We're on Henry V.
There you go.
So you encounter all kinds of things.
There's a, when you're thinking about those things, it's the genre, because not everything translates over from US to, or even from, you know, like La Femme Nikita is the rare at the time film from France that actually did do well here, that it did translate to the US. And it was a movie that even before it was remade and turned into a series and all those other things, that was a film that people in this country were aware of. And we usually are very hesitant towards foreign films. But did you have like sweet spots in certain markets where you knew that certain types of genres would do well in certain unsold markets?
Yeah, like British gangster films we really like. So if they haven't sold the UK, we know they're going to sell the UK on a British gangster film. You know, like Layer Cake, Gangster Number One, all those. We did one, a boxing one. My Name is Lenny, about Lenny.
Yeah.
The boxer. And so we like those kind of movies. And then in France, there's, you know, we did finance another movie called Cyrano de Bergerac. You know, we try to stick with, you know, Father of the Bride. We try to stick with classic tales that we think will translate. But, you know, we're always working with a team of people, right? So in those days, we worked with UGC Films and we worked with Gaumont. So they were experts in what they were doing. So we piggybacked and supported them in some of their efforts.
That makes a lot of sense. And then what do you do? What do you, now you're in a different phase of your career. It seems that you're not just looking for that in between, that you're more, how have things changed for you in the last, you know, 20, 30 years now?
Well, I have to give the credit to my partner, Mark, who has been supportive of our activity. But we have been super aggressive in certain areas like action and what the younger ladies in the audience call dad movies, where it's a dad.
Guilty.
I don't know why they call it dad movies, but
I mean, I'm a dad, and I know exactly what that is, and they're not wrong. So
yeah, it's a dad whose daughter or son gets kidnapped, and
sure,
he possesses a unique set of skills that he has to go after the child to save the child, and so I guess that's a genre in itself, you know, and then. And then we got creative on some movies that we would take a chance with. Like back in the day, there was a picture called Zeroville. That,
oh my God, Zeroville's great. I remember Zeroville, absolutely.
James Franco directed with his pals, Seth Rogen, Will Ferrell, Megan Fox. You know.
Yeah, that was one I had to seek out. It was a small little movie. Yeah, I
remember. It was small, and it would have done better, but unfortunately, you know, our town went through a very serious time with the Me Too type of things. And so I can't say who's guilty and who's innocent because I wasn't there. But, you know, it was a house cleaning at the very least required in some executives that were improper. But and then we did some creative movies like I Am Michael was another movie we did that was starred Franco, Emma Roberts, and Zachary Quinto.
Sure.
Another great cast about a guy who was gay and started YA YG magazine in the Castro district of San Francisco, who wakes up one day, he has heart palpitations, and they say he's going to die of the same thing that killed his father. And so he pulls out his mom's Bible and he prays to God and he says, God, if you don't kill me like you killed my father, I will change my ways. A week later, he goes to the hospital and they say, I don't know what happened, but you were having panic attacks. The tests are now not the same diagnosis that we had before. And then the guy, true to his prayer, goes to pastor camp in North Dakota, meets Emma Roberts, falls in love, and becomes a pastor.
This episode of the Following Films podcast is brought to you by Bookmans. So today, I went into Bookmans and decided to try to find a film by Michael Mann. I went over to the Blu-ray section and saw copies of several films I already own, and then I found it, Black Hat. This is one I haven't seen in quite a while since it came out, and I figured maybe it was time for a reassessment of this much maligned film. So Black Hat is a cybercrime thriller directed by Michael Mann that delves into the world of cybercrime, hacking, and international intrigue. While it promises to be a gripping exploration of the dangers lurking in the digital age, the execution falls short of expectations. The film follows convicted hacker played by Chris Hemsworth, who's temporarily released from prison to help the American and Chinese authorities track down a criminal network that's responsible for a series of major attacks. As the hunt takes them across the globe, Hemsworth's character must navigate the murky waters of the criminal underworld while grappling with his own demons. One of the film's major shortcomings is its lack of technical accuracy and realism. While it attempts to portray the world of hacking authentically, it often falls into cliches and inaccuracies that ultimately undermine the credibility of the story. So the hacking sequences are exaggerated and unrealistic, relying more on flashy visuals than genuine technical expertise. And this is coming from an absolute layman. I am not somebody who knows anything about hacking, and yet I can see some of the things that just flat out aren't true in this film. And that particular disconnect may disappoint viewers familiar with the subject matter or looking for a more grounded portrayal of cybercrime. So despite these flaws though, Black Hat does have its moments. Michael Mann's signature style is evident in the film's beautiful, sleek cinematography and the signature action sequences, and the international setting adds depth to the narrative. It highlights the global nature of cyber threats and the challenges of international cooperation. Chris Hemsworth delivers a solid performance as Hathaway, bringing the character a sense of depth who's grappling for redemption. And the supporting cast includes, had no idea, I'd completely forgotten this, but Viola Davis, who's really great in the film and adds a lot to the film. But ultimately, Black Hat falls short of its potential. While it offers a glimpse into the world of cybercrime and espionage, its lack of technical accuracy and reliance on cliches detracts from the overall experience. And despite its flaws, fans of Michael Mann's work or of the cyber thriller genre, I guess if you're a huge Johnny Mnemonic fan and you're looking for some more cyber thriller, you could do worse than Black Hat. However, for those seeking a more realistic, nuanced exploration of hacking and cybersecurity, this might leave you wanting more, and I'm not sure I can recommend this one. But despite that, this gave me the chance to check out a film that I've been meaning to reevaluate.
And I'm like, wow, that's a crazy story. Well, let's do it. And but at the time, you know, if you watched it, the gay community didn't know why we had him become straight and a pastor and get married. And the straight community didn't understand why we made him gay in the first place. But we didn't make him anything. It's just a true story in a New York Times article. We're just telling the true story the way it happened.
Right.
So sometimes your intentions are good, but your audience has a mind of its own, so you have to bend to their will sometimes.
Well, you can have good intentions, but if it doesn't line up with the just, you can just miss it. It's like that, like you're playing a game of double dutch and you just miss the step on it where, you know, if this would have been a year earlier or a year later, it's just sometimes the political thought at the time is just, it changes. And so you go back and look at things from 5 years ago and they hold a different weight when you watch it through today's eyes, you know, that 10, 15, 20 years ago, and God only knows what the art that we're creating today will look like 10 years from now. So you just have to make it for the moment that you're in and know your intentions were there at the time. Because yeah, you can't answer for all the other bullshit.
Well, that's very well said. But sometimes we have to make decisions and we won't know what the world is like in 2 years.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I mean, when you think about, you mentioned the Me Too, that the world changed seemingly overnight, that happened very quickly. And a lot of that is for the better, that there was a lot of changes that needed to happen. But, you know, simple little ways that we talk about certain things are wildly different than they were just a few short years ago. And I think it's a step in the right direction. I'm glad to see those changes. But, you know, there's certain things in myself that I can see, you know, things that I've created from just a few years ago that I look at and say, oh, God, wish I could change that. But it's a reflection of who I was. And it's, I don't necessarily feel bad about that. I know that I've been trying to grow and change since that in the face of those changes. And I think that's what really matters in the end.
I agree. COVID was another thing like that.
Yeah, for sure.
We were making movies. Everyone had to wear a mask. You had to get tested three to five times a week.
Yeah.
You'd have to shut down. We had to shut down God is a Bullet twice over COVID. You know, and those are expensive. You know, you have crews of 150 people and stars, and you got to shut it down until they get better, which could be a month.
Yeah.
Or 6 weeks. And you still got to finish the movie. So, I mean, you know, what can I tell you?
Start stop's expensive. I mean, and you can't foresee something like that happening. But then, so how do you decide what projects you're going to take on? What are the things that you feel like you can bring to a project when it's something that you see, something you read a script, or what part do you come, when do you come into the process?
I come in at different times on different projects. You know, okay, we have our own slate of films, maybe 75 films we developed over the years that we, you know, we make two or three of them a year as they become popular or the subject matter grabs someone's attention.
Sure.
And then, you know, we have a recent relationship with an agency, UTA, who has been now, one of our companies made a deal with them. They're guiding us. They get projects. They send them our way. Some of them are feasible. Some of them are only feasible at a fraction of the budget that they want to make it with.
Got it.
So we give them an offer. We say, hey, we could give you $3 million for this. And they say, well, the guy can't make it for less than $7 million. And you say, we can give you $3 million for it. If you can put the rest of it together, God bless you. And sometimes they do, and many times they don't, you know. And so we do that, and we'll encounter directors that are artistic and have attracted a wonderful cast, like one we're doing now. Alex is a writer-director with her sister that attracted Elizabeth Banks to a movie called Dream Quill. And so, you know, if you have pieces of it, but the pieces won't come together in time to start the movie, you lose the movie. So
sure,
many times we're the experience and the glue that keeps it together, given our experience and the amount of movies that we have made. And so sometimes that pushes them into production where they might have fallen apart otherwise.
That makes a lot of sense. And I was the next thing I had in mind that I wanted to ask you about was almost it would almost there's two separate sides to this because a lot of your work is invisible. That the work that you do, you can't see it necessarily. It's just that there's a finished film. And so money was spent and you were able to help out with that process and make that thing a reality. But is there a film of yours that you're most proud of for just the quality of it, and maybe one that you're most proud of because of the work that you put into it? Are they the same?
Well, most of them are team efforts, you see.
Of
So
course.
we have a movie that a young lady in our office has led. Her name's Grace Santos. She wanted to make a cute high school movie, right? So she led the charge with Natalie and Caitlin and Gabriella on a movie called Almost Popular.
Yeah.
It's all these Disney kids. We shot it at John Marshall High School. And it's a real Mean Girls for this time period. Now, I wasn't a popular girl in school, even though the writer was, and some of the girls in our office are.
Yeah.
I pretty much walked around set asking the director when we were going to kill somebody. And they kept reminding me that there were no murders in this movie.
Not in this one.
But I have to say, I've watched it now and it's done. And it's r a really cute teenage movie. Now, normally we might not have made a movie like that, but because of the breadth of experiences of our teams, we are able to approach that kind of movie with a fresh approach. And sometimes, my job is to stay out of the way.
Right.
So that's what in music we call the rest note.
Yes. Yes.
Everybody knows when you get the rest note wrong. Right?
Yeah,
Everybody's
absolutely.
silent, but you're playing some note. So sometimes, I'm there to help. And have approaches for when it didn't go right to fix it. And some pictures I'm leading the charge. We developed one right now about a spy ship that was taken into possession by North Korea, and the crew was taken hostage. And what that was all about, based on a book, loosely based on a book and historical facts. So now I like that kind of historical, kind of actiony,
Yeah, same here.
military type of movie. We do a lot with military vets that write true stories. And so I'll be more active with that kind of movie. We have another movie called Aquarius about a financial mastermind that is working side by side with a group of notorious criminals and terrorists, and that's being played by Samuel Jackson.
Nice.
It's going to be directed by a guy we've worked with twice before, Johnny Martin. And so that is a lot of action and a lot of killing, and I have a lot of experience in that subject matter. So it all varies, and the movie Dreamquil is about a woman who goes on a virtual vacation, Elizabeth Banks, and comes back to find that her AI robot has taken over her life.
Yeah.
And looks like her and talks like her and has the AI program. And so it's how does she regain her life back in a world where the AI is so good that the robot can duplicate her life, And so Alex, our director, and her sister have written a brilliant script, and we're super proud of them. And And it looks like Paramount will buy the domestic and will
Oh, congrats. That's
sell the
great.
foreign. Like that's, the team at UTA, that's the director and all the other producers and Natalie. So we're very proud of these kind of things. And I try to do only what's required to help them realize their dream,
Well, I think you nailed it in the rest note. It's the that moment that you have to wait for and wait through. In the best music, sometimes it's when that pause is given one beat past where you think that it should come back in because that's where it was comfortable and you felt like, oh, it's coming on the fourth. I know this. Oh, wait, no, it's coming on the fifth. And it has that extra resonance because it does that. And we have to know that within when it's time for us to speak from our experience and how we can support. And know when we should just shut the hell up and let people do what they need to do and follow. If your job is to follow the drummer, because they're going to hit that note when it's time to come in, you follow the drummer and you wait for your turn. And it's just, it's sometimes waiting through silence can be utterly painful, but man, that's a good life lesson to learn.
I agree. The rest know.
That's wonderful, man.
The people know when you are playing the rest note wrong.
Awesome. Michael, thank you so much for taking the time
It's
to do
such a
this today.
pleasure to speak to you. I hope to hear and speak to you again someday.
I will hold you to that. I feel like we barely even scratched the surface here. I would love to chat with you again, man. This was a lot of fun. This was a
And
pleasure.
let me know or let Tim know. If you wanted to spend a little time with Mr. Cassavetes
I'd love
about
to. Yeah, that'd be
Dodge the
great.
Bullet, he's also got another movie about penguins that he's doing right now. So you never know.
I would love to set that up. Anybody, any chance I get to tell people to watch God as a Bullet, I will jump on that opportunity because I think that's just one of those ones
I'm
people need
sure
to
Nick
see.
would be very happy to hear that.
That's awesome. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it, Michael.
Thank you, my friend.
All right.
Thanks, Chris. We'll talk soon.
All right. Take care, Tim. Thanks.
Bye-bye
Appreciate
now.
you. Bye-bye, guys. Because I keep hearing that Black Hat is an underrated film, and maybe I'll give it another 10 years, follow back up with
And
this
I'm
one,
like,
and
wow,
see if
that's a
it
crazy
does end up
story.
coming around for me. But
Well, let's do it.
remember, Bookman's, they
And
have your cool covered.
but at
Hope you
the
enjoy the rest of the
time,
show.
if you
Thanks.
watched it, gay community didn't know why we had him become straight and a pastor and get married. And the straight community didn't understand why we made him gay in the first place, but we didn't make him anything. It's just a true story in a New York Times article. We're just telling the true story the way it happened.
Right.
So sometimes your intentions are good, but your audience has a mind of its own, so you have to bend to their will sometimes.
Well, you can have good intentions, but if it doesn't line up with the just you can just miss it. It's like that like you're playing a game of double dutch and you just miss the step on it where it that if this would have been a year earlier or a year later, it's just sometimes the political thought at the time is just it changes. And so you go back and look at things from 5 years ago and they hold a different weight when you watch it through today's eyes, that 10, 15, 20 years ago. And God only knows what the art that we're creating today will look like 10 years from now. So you just have to make it for the moment that you're in and know your intentions were there at the time. Because you can't answer for all the other bullshit.
Well, that's very well said, but sometimes we have to make decisions and we won't know what the world is like in 2 years.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I mean, when you think about you mentioned the Me Too, that the world changed seemingly overnight, that happened very quickly. And a lot of that is for the better, that there was a lot of changes that needed to happen. But, simple little ways that we talk about certain things are wildly different than they were just a few short years ago. And I think it's a step in the right direction. I'm glad to see those changes, but there's certain things in myself that I can see, things that I've created from just a few years ago that I look at and say, ah, oh, God, wish I could change that. But it's a reflection of who I was. And I don't necessarily feel bad about that. I know that I've been trying to grow and change since that in the face of those changes. And I think that's what really matters in the end.
I agree. COVID was another thing like that,
Yeah, for sure.
we were making movies. Everyone had to wear a mask. You had to get tested three to five times a week.
Yeah.
You'd have to shut down. We had to shut down Goddess of Bullet twice over COVID. You know, and those are expensive. You know, you have crews of 150 people and stars, and you got to shut it down until they get better, which could be a month.
Yeah.
Or 6 weeks. And you still got to finish the movie. So, I mean, you know, what can I tell you?
Start stop's expensive. I mean, and you can't foresee something like that happening. But then, so how do you decide what projects you're going to take on? What are the things that you feel like you can bring to a project when it's something that you see, something you read a script, or what part do you come, when do you come into the process?
I come in at different times on different projects. You know, okay. We have our own slate of films, maybe 75 films we developed over the years that we, you know, we make two or three of them a year as they become popular or the subject matter grabs someone's attention.
Sure.
And then, you know, we have a recent relationship with an agency, UTA, who has been now, one of our companies made a deal with them. They're guiding us. They get projects. They send them our way. Some of them are feasible. Some of them are only feasible at a fraction of the budget that they want to make it with.
Got it.
So we give them an offer. We say, hey, we could give you $3 million for this. And they say, well, the guy can't make it for less than seven. And you say, we can give you $3 million for it. You, if you can put the rest of it together, God bless you. And sometimes they do, and many times they don't, you know. And so we do that, and we'll encounter directors that are artistic and have attracted a wonderful cast, like one we're doing now. Alex is a writer-director with her sister that attracted Elizabeth Banks to a movie called Dreamquil. And so, you know, if you have pieces of it, but the pieces won't come together in time to start the movie, you lose the movie. So
sure.
many times we're the experience and the glue that keeps it together, given our experience and the amount of movies that we have made. And so sometimes that pushes them into production where they might have fallen apart otherwise.
That makes a lot of sense. And I was, the next thing I had in mind that I wanted to ask you about was almost, it would almost, there's two separate sides to this, because a lot of your work is invisible, that the work that you do, you can't see it necessarily. It's just that there's a finished film. And so money was spent, and, you know, you were able to help out with that process and make that thing a reality. But is there a film of yours that you're most proud of, or just the quality of it, and maybe one that you're most proud of because of the work that you put into it? Are they the same?
Well, most of them are team efforts, you see. So we have a movie that a young lady in our office has led. Her name's Grace Santos. She wanted to make a cute high school movie, right? So she led the charge with Natalie and Caitlin and Gabriella on a movie called Almost Popular.
Yeah,
it's all these Disney kids. We shot it at John Marshall High School, and it's a real Mean Girls for this time period. Now, I wasn't a popular girl in school, even though the writer was, and some of the girls in our office are.
Yeah.
So, you know, I pretty much walked around set asking the director when we were going to kill somebody. And they kept reminding me that there were no murders in this movie.
Not in this one.
But I have to say, I've watched it now and it's done. And It's a really cute teenage movie. Now, normally we might not have made a movie like that, but because of the breadth of experiences of our teens, we are able to approach that kind of movie with a fresh approach. And sometimes my job is to stay out of the way.
Right.
So that's what in music we call the rest note.
Yes. Yes.
Everybody knows when you get the rest note wrong. Right?
Yeah,
Everybody's
absolutely.
silent, but you're playing some note. So sometimes, I'm there to help and have approaches for when it didn't go right to fix it. And some pictures I'm leading the charge. We've developed one right now about a spy ship that was taken into possession by North Korea, and the crew was taken hostage, and what that was all about, based on a book. Loosely based on a book and historical facts. So now I like that kind of historical, kind of actiony,
Yeah, same here.
military type of movie. We do a lot with military vets that write true stories. And so I'll be more active with that kind of movie. We have another movie called Aquarius about a financial mastermind that is working side by side with a group of notorious criminals and terrorists, and that's being played by Samuel Jackson. So
Nice.
it's going to be directed by a guy we've worked with twice before, Johnny Martin. And so that is a lot of action and a lot of killing, and I have a lot of experience in that subject matter. So it all varies, and the movie Dreamquil is about a woman who goes on a virtual vacation, Elizabeth Banks, and comes back to find that her AI robot has taken over her life
Yeah.
and looks like her and talks like her and has the AI program. And so it's how does she regain her life back in a world where the AI is so good that the robot can duplicate her life, And so Alex, our director, and her sister have written a brilliant script, and we're super proud of them, and it looks like Paramount will buy the domestic and will
Oh, congrats. That's
sell the
great.
foreign. Like that's the team at UTA, that's the director and all the other producers and Natalie. So we're very proud of these kind of things. And I try to do only what's required to help them realize their dream,
Well, I think you nailed it in the rest note. It's the that moment that you have to wait for and wait through. In the best music, sometimes it's when that pause is given one beat past where you think that it should come back in because that's where it was comfortable and you felt like, oh, it's coming on the fourth. I know this. Oh, wait, no, it's coming on the fifth. And it has that extra resonance because it does that. And we have to know that within when it's time for us to speak from our experience and how we can support. And know when we should just shut the hell up and let people do what they need to do and follow. If your job is to follow the drummer because they're going to hit that note when it's time to come in, you follow the drummer and you wait for your turn. And it's just, it's sometimes waiting through silence can be utterly painful, but man, that's a good life lesson to learn.
I agree. The rest know.
That's wonderful, man.
The people know when you are playing the rest note wrong.
Awesome. Michael, thank you so much for taking the time
It's
to do
such a
this today.
pleasure to speak to you. I hope to hear and speak to you again someday.
I will hold you to that. I feel like we barely even scratched the surface here. I would love to chat with you again, man. This was a lot of fun. This was a pleasure.
And let me know, or let Tim know, if you wanted to spend a little time with Mr. Cassavetes about,
I'd love to. Yeah, that'd be great.
Bullet. He's also got another movie about penguins that he's doing right now. So you never know.
I would love to set that up. Anybody, any chance I get to tell people to watch God as a Bullet, I will jump on that opportunity, because I think that's just one of those ones.
I'm sure Nick would be very happy to hear that.
That's awesome. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it, Michael.
Thank you, my friend.
All right.
Thanks, Chris. We'll talk soon.
All right. Take care, Tim. Thanks. Appreciate you.
Time enough to figure you out. Time enough to write this down. Wish me luck. Give me hope.